Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
It's time for True American Heroes, For the Record, with Jack Rutland. Another exclusive on Super Talk Mississippi 102.1 FM. Many of our heroes have taken their stories with them to the grave. But this show is about the stories and personal experiences of these veterans.
Well, welcome to True American Heroes, For the Record, as we honor our veterans from Lincoln County and South Mississippi who have served their country and worn the uniform of their country. And today it's a real honor for me to have a young man with us who wore the absolutely gorgeous uniform of the Marine Corps. People used to say the sexiest uniform out there was a Marine Corps dress uniform. Chris Exifas, who has served in Afghanistan and is with us today to talk about his experience. Chris, is glad we're glad to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
Well, let's just start back, because the Marine Corps is famous for its basic training, and your home is not originally from Lincoln County, even though you live here now with your family. You were from Minden, Louisiana.
Minden, Louisiana.
And I think it was in Minden that you got into the Corps.
Yeah.
And let me ask you this. Now, this is a question, because everybody kind of knows what it's like being in the Corps. I mean, why would you choose the Marine Corps?
Well, there's multiple reasons. I guess the first and foremost, there's never been another Marine in my entire family.
Oh, okay.
It's either been Army or my older brother, he joined the Navy. Of course, the reputation. I tell you a funny story. I was actually thinking about the Navy when I first started thinking anything to do with the military, and Marine recruiter called my house, who to this day is one of my really good friends.
Sure.
And he said, "I'm calling to talk to you about the Marine Corps, see if you're interested or whatever." And I said, "Thank you so much, but my brother joined the Navy, and I'm really kind of, you know, thinking and talking about the Navy and everything."
Sure.
And he said, "Well, you're not good enough anyway," and he hung the phone up.
Oh, I bet that got your attention.
So at that point in time, I said, "Well, I've got to see what this is all about."
Yeah,
and I called him back, and I kind of went from there. And you know, back in when I was in high school, freshman, sophomore, you know, you start researching and looking and learning and everything.
Right,
and the more,
right.
more I saw and the more I learned and heard about, the more I fell in love with what they did and who they are and what they stood for.
Absolutely. And what a heritage and what a history that the United States Marine Corps, as all of our branches have, but there's just something about walking up to a guy that's also been in the Corps and, you know, just saying Semper Fi and that camaraderie that's there just because of the history of the service. But all of our services, and I don't want to get any Navy and Army guys mad at me, but Chris, you know, it's just, I mean, it's just a fact. There's nothing quite like basic training in unless you're in the Marine Corps.
That's absolutely
right. It's extremely unique. So I believe you said you took your basic at Parris Island.
I did. I graduated high school May 18th, 2007, and I was on an airplane June 25th, 2007, headed to Parris Island.
Ooh.
And, you know, there's not enough YouTube videos or documentaries that you can watch to prepare you for that. And I'll never forget the bus pulling up and drill instructor coming on the bus and telling you to get on the yellow footprints. And there's no thought you can think of. It's just get up and go. And the first time we got in a squad bay, after we had gotten our camis and our sea bags and all our little gear that you get right when you get there to kind of sustain you the first few receiving weeks, he was coming down the middle of the squad bay, and he was just a hollering and yelling, and all I could do was just laugh. I don't know why, but I just it was becoming surreal that, okay,
sure,
you're here now, you know, and there's no going home. And boy, was that a mistake.
Did he see you laugh?
He saw me
Uh-oh.
Laugh.
Okay.
And he snapped his finger and simultaneously snapped and pointed at me, and it seemed like he floated across the room right towards me, and I didn't laugh again.
Well, I think it would certainly be an understatement to call Marine basic intense.
Right.
But I've also heard it characterized as tearing down and rebuilding.
It is.
Because
it
the
is.
Marine Corps has got to have a special kind of soldier, just as every branch does. They have special assignments indeed. And you guys have to be – you have to fit a very strict and tight description of what they expect a Marine to be.
Absolutely.
Because of the things that you guys have to be able to do. Tell me a little bit about some of the things that stand out to you in basic training, because I know it is so intense.
The sand pit's the first thing that stands out.
Now, what's a sand pit?
The sand pit is where you go for some extracurricular training as far as, you know, when your platoon, because everything is done as a group discipline, and that's the main thing. When one messes up, everyone is punished. Your chain is only as strong as your weakest link.
True.
So until everyone becomes as one and can work in unison. The sand pit is basically where they go to destroy you. I mean, it's just a humongous box of sand. You're rolling around. You're doing push-ups, jumping jacks, sit-ups. You're just burpees up and down, and you're just sweating covered in sand. And that's as far as the discipline goes, that's the most memory I'll ever have.
Now, tell us, a lot of folks may not know where Parris Island is.
South Carolina.
And it's not a big metropolitan area.
No.
It's how far from the coast are you? Not very far.
Not very far, but the island itself is a swamp around it.
Yeah.
So if the drill instructors don't get you, the gators will if you try to go.
I imagine mosquitoes and snakes.
Sand fleas and the mosquitoes are the worst.
All right. So how long did basic training last?
13 weeks.
13 weeks. Now during that time, while they're breaking you down and putting you back together, there is that cohesiveness that's being built and camaraderie between the company, your group, and also though they're starting to look for your basic skills that will follow you through your whole career in the Corps, things that you do well, and they say, hey, you look like you might be infantry, you might be radio, you might be artillery, you might be armored. Is that just written testing, or do you get some input on your part about what you'd like to be as far as assignments?
Well, as far as your MOS goes, every Marine is a rifleman. So it doesn't matter if your MOS is this or if your MOS is that, every Marine is a rifleman. And when you show up to basic training, you already have a MOS designated. But that doesn't mean anything because I showed up to Parris Island and I had signed to be a military police officer. That was my original, and I didn't find out until after boot camp that I was going to California to be a radio operator.
Okay.
But as far as deciding what you're going to do through basic, it really basic is just, basic training for us is just to make you a basic Marine first.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, there's no MOS designed or designated areas.
Okay.
You learn the traditions and the history and the knowledge, and you learn rifleman skills, and, of course, you get in shape.
The discipline is one of the things that the Marines that I've been around during my life have always been impressed with their self-discipline, and I think a lot of it does come from their training and what's expected of them when they're in the Corps. And, you know, just the cohesiveness, I think that's a significant term, because when you're facing combat or even when you're doing a stateside job, I mean, it's doing it for the group, for the Corps. And whatever your assignment is, you do it. So you finished up, and then I heard you mention just then that you your MOS ended up being radio.
Right.
And you were sent to California for training.
Yeah, 29 Palms, California.
Okay.
Literally nothing there but 29 palm trees in the desert. And terrible place.
Terrible place. But you were there for training, and so that gave you when you say radio operator, I think you're probably talking about one that's self-contained, you carry on your
back. Right.
And so that meant you were going to be actively involved in moving around carrying that box. How much did it weigh, Chris?
It varied. Some of the RTOs weighed 6 to 7 pounds. Some of them that required a few more antennas or satellite antennas could get up to 10, 11 pounds.
Okay, so, all right, you finish your training there. Deployment. Let's talk about your first deployment.
We graduated from radio operator school. We were all standing out there receiving our tickets, our certificates, and they start listing off who's going to what unit. And there was a buddy of mine that I had met in boot camp. You know, my last name is an X. His last name was a W. So we were kind of side by side all 13 weeks.
That's right.
And after that, and we went to MCT together, which is a month-long combat training school. We were there together. Mm-hmm. And we went to California. We were there together. And we ended up going to the same battalion, 2nd Battalion, 9th Marines. And we were sitting there listening to them call out what unit we were going to. And they said, Victor 2-9. Camp Lejeune, and we just kind of both looked at each other and said, we're going to go fight.
Mm-hmm.
And we got our orders and landed in Camp Lejeune earlier that January and got with our battalion. And we got there, went and got our packs and all our gear that you get issued, and met with our new platoon and everything. And it wasn't 4 weeks later. We had a battalion meeting, and did the big formation. They said, we're headed to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And we both looked at each other again and said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're fixing to go fight. And that's when we headed out and flew to Iraq.
Okay, so what year was that, Chris?
2008.
Okay, 2008.
2008.
All right, so you get over there. Most of the, I think if I'm, my history is correct, most of the fighting, the intense fighting was over with.
Right, right.
So your role was pretty much as a peacekeeper?
Right, peacekeeper.
Okay. And I believe we talked a little bit about the fact that you ended up doing a lot of training.
Right.
You were training Iraqi
police officers
to be police officers and be military. Were you training them to be in just the basic military, or were you talking or training them in radio operation?
It was a little bit of all of it. They had what we were calling, we referred to as Vietnam era communication equipment, old school stuff, kind of a secondhand thing. And basically, we were just teaching them not so much how to use it, because It really didn't take much knowledge to understand how to speak on a radio, but how to securely and safely speak.
Understandably.
You know, understandably and the communication security of it. The type of lingo, the type of code words, call names, and that type of thing.
Okay. All right. Well, we're honored today to have Chris Exifis, who is Marine Corps, spent time in Iraq. And in just a minute, when we come back from our break, we're going to be talking about his time in Afghanistan, which was considerably different from Iraq. Welcome back. We're honored to have with us today Chris Exifis, who served our country, wore the Marine Corps uniform, served in Iraq, and then also served in Afghanistan. We were talking just a moment ago about your role of service in while you were in Iraq was training. It was a little bit different after that was over with. You came back to the States and then got redeployed to Afghanistan. It was a little bit of a different environment there, because that was still a pretty hot area with a lot of combat going on. And tell us a little bit about what you were doing and where you went in Afghanistan when you arrived in Afghanistan.
Well, when we came back from Iraq, you know, being in the military and where we were, we don't follow the news and all that type of stuff as you would every day here. So we're not every day constantly checking on how bad fighting situations or whatever may be. So, you know, in our mind, we know Afghanistan's, it's a little heated, but we don't know how hot it is.
Sure.
So we come back from Iraq and we're thinking that we can carry the world on our shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to Afghanistan, and we kind of start training with the same mindset. Okay, we've been there and been to Iraq. This is just, you know, possibly another similar deployment. Let's go through our training like we do, seriousness, 100% at everything, and let's get over there and get this done. And when we arrived, boy, was it different. When I was in Iraq, we were stayed in an old children's school. So I had a brick building. I had a nice bed, pillow, sheets, and spent the entire 7 months there. And when I got to Afghanistan, the first 2 months was in a sleeping bag on the ground with a bug net around it. I had no bed. I had no tent. We had no showers for those first month and a half, 2 months. And I don't want to get into specifics of the bathroom arrangements, but it was nothing like it was.
Is primitive a good word?
Yeah, there you go. Primitive. And
all right. So, and that's right. At that time when you went back over there, there was still an awful lot of activity, insurgents and folks that were not happy that the American presence was in Afghanistan, and they were doing everything they could to hurt you guys and to get you to leave. So, but you were there on a mission sent by the government. So, you know, we were talking about that. what kind of missions did you guys, your particular group, get involved in? I think you said something about IEDs and just
Well, the battalion's main goal, of course, was to locate and destroy IEDs and, mm-hmm. you know, okay. patrols for insurgents.
IEDs.
Improvised explosive devices.
Usually found on the side of the road or
in the middle
it could
of the
be
road
anywhere.
Or,
right.
Absolutely. And a lot more of what we did over there was monitoring. We had the drones above head, and we were constantly monitoring. We had what was called a blimp. It looked like a big blimp, a very high-powered camera on it. It was about 4,000 feet up. And just constantly standing, scanning around, it could see a pretty good amount. Wow. You know, you've got guys that are just constantly going and planning because where we were in that area, there was a lot of organized insurgents, spotty.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of them was 1-, 2-, and 3-man groups planting bombs here and planting bombs there and trying to distort you in any kind of way. And whether it be you have a tribal meeting with some elders. And sometimes it would be a setup, and there would be some bombs along the route or some bombs there and that type of thing.
So what was your mission? If you found an IED, were you to disarm it, or did y'all just detonate usually? Or how was that done?
Well, 98% of the time, it was detonated by the EOD guys.
Mm-hmm.
These guys were ordnance disposal. That's what they did every single day. And just like you would see here, if there was a bomb at the mall, the bomb squad would come in and safely detonate it.
Right.
It was the same thing we did.
Right.
Sometimes we used a little bit bigger boom to take care of the boom that we found. But we detonated them almost every time.
Wow. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Now, the weather, I know, is Iraq. I don't know if Iraq and Afghanistan are similar, but I know it gets awful hot because I've had friends and family over there, and the weather's not real conducive. So you had to deal with the weather as well as the insurgents.
Yeah, it was we left here July. So we kind of got there at the tail end of Afghanistan of the summertime when it was starting to kind of cool off. But when the winter hit, And it was,
what kind of temperatures are we talking about? Any idea?
It was around the low 20s, but it was a constant. You know, here in Mississippi, we'll have a week where it may hit the mid to high 20s and 30s, but when you're talking there, you're talking 2 and 3 weeks at the same temperature.
Wow.
And
wow.
By that time, deeper into our employment, we had gotten tents that we started staying in, but we had sleeping bags. I mean, we didn't have heaters inside or any kind of whatever else. It was you getting them 3 sleeping bags and you zip it up to the head. And,
all right. So you were also telling me about a lot of times you would have night missions. Now, you were not doing IED search at that time, but you would had night missions where y'all would go out on patrols in small groups or large groups. That had to be interesting itself. Had a lot of night vision. Technology, I'm sure, that was necessary.
Some of the night missions where it would be, you know, maybe transporting some detainees from one spot to another because you do something like that during the daytime and their buddies are going to try to come, cause a firefight, try to get them. It was something like that. Majority of it was ComSec missions. You know, you've got several of these FOBs scattered out all around the small base we have.
A FOB is?
A forward operating base.
That's right.
So you have a camp, which is it's not super huge, but it's kind of big, and you have FOBs all around it where you have squads and smaller platoons stationed out around.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Their radios had to be upgraded ever so often with the right crypto material and the right networking, all that stuff. And you had to take an Osprey ride in the middle of the night and land in one of those little LZs that is surrounded by maybe 6 or 7 Marines. You know, that's it. No C-wire, no big Connex boxes or sandboxes or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And it's an eerie feeling.
I can only imagine. So how long were you in Afghanistan?
7 months.
7 months. That was your deployment.
That was.
Wow. Incredibly important mission at that time, still is, and what you guys did was pretty incredible. Anything stand out about your service? Would you do it again, Chris?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In a heartbeat. And I guess the most important thing that stands out would be the guys that we lost, because you think about before you go into situations like that or before you lose a friend or a guy you may have knew or certain situations, guys you knew real well, it didn't hit you until it happened when you start to think about it and deal with it and learn and live with it. Think about their family so much and what they think about and what they go through.
And you guys lost some men.
We did. We did. We lost 15 of them while I was over there.
Wow.
And,
ultimate sacrifice.
From the third week we were there to the last week we were there. And that's something you just never forget.
Pretty incredible. So you served your 4 years and you left the Marine Corps couple of years ago?
I did. I got out April of 2011 and moved here to Brookhaven and been here ever since.
Well, we're certainly glad to have you in Brookhaven. It's been a treat to have you here, Chris. We've been interviewing Chris Cephas, Marine Corps veteran, served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it's been a privilege to have you. And let me just say, as I do to all of our veterans that I interview, Chris, on behalf of our country, thank you for your service. One of countless numbers of men and women who've worn the uniform in time of need, but no role is insignificant and no role is unimportant. So thank you for your service and wearing the uniform. And it's been a privilege to have you in the studio with us this morning.
Thank you so much. Real glad to be here.
Thank you, folks. Join us again soon for another edition of True American Heroes.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.